Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on strategic relocation right after this. You know, in 1970, the world food supply was 73 days for every man, woman, and child on planet Earth, but today, it's down to less than 38 days. Now, the global 2,000 mad scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians, as I call them, plan to use famine, disease, plague, and pestilence to reduce the Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years under the Club of Rome plan. In Revelation chapter 6, the God of Israel told us exactly the same thing in essentially the same words, using false prophets, war, famine, and disease. Now, in 1920, nearly 50% of our people lived on the land as subsistence farmers, producing their own food, and food for the rest of the world, and food for you and me. But today, we Americans have now chosen to live in the cities, and only 3% of us now live on the land. That means then that 97% of us are no longer self-sufficient in our food production. Now, we Americans produce grain for export, all right. But then we turn around and import our grapes from Chile, our tomatoes from Mexico, and berries from Guatemala. And our food supply is in the hands of foreigners and multinational corporations who support this Global 2000 World Population Control Program. And these globalists, with this genocide agenda, have a cause that they're willing to die for, and I say let them die for their cause, and let you and I live for ours. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free, and you can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, my subsistence and survival school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, and then click onto the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about strategic relocation. It actually has to do with subsistence and survival. It's like being on the Titanic, and somebody comes up to you in the A-deck lounge and sidles up onto the bar stool and says, "Hey, listen, Charlie, I had a dream last night. And in my dream, the Titanic hits an iceberg, and it sinks in 2 hours and 20 minutes and kills 1,500 people. And you're telling me this story." And so I say, "Hey, listen, that was quite a dream. Don't you know that you're riding on the unsinkable ship?" You know, we get a mindset in our minds, and we believe that America is the unsinkable ship. This is the world's only superpower. Yeah, the world's only superpower that's in debt, God knows how much. But it's in the trillions and trillions of dollars. It's more money in debt than the entire nation with all of its, if it's of its infrastructure, is worth. You couldn't sell this thing in a garage sale and get enough money to pay for it. Now, in the interim, you could sit there and say, "Well, so what? So we owe these people all this money. What are they going to do? We've got the bomb." And yeah, you got a good point there. And the Romans had a good point there. They had the world's mightiest military. But if you take a look throughout history for the last 3,000 or 4,000 years, you find that these empires and city-states that dominated the area, the region, or the world have all come and they've all gone. They all dissipate and collapse. Now, do you believe that the United States of America is any different? Now, if you're one of those that takes a look at Gibbon's Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, written back in the, you know, revolutionary times, he documented five basic causes for the decline and fall of the Roman Empire, and we're doing all of those right now on a grander scale. They debased their money, and we have debased our money. They turned against their religion and their religious ideals, and we have done the same thing. We have no place for religion. We believe in evolution, and science has taken its place. Morality has sunk to its lowest level. If you'd have told me when I was a kid that we would be harboring, that we would be openly espousing gay marriages and the homosexual lifestyle, I would have thought you were a lunatic. Today, it's common. Hell, even the clergy out here is telling you that you need to marry your brother or your uncle or your friend Tom. So when we take a look at the morality, we take a look at the economics. We are still the world's number one military power. So were the Romans. And then they declined. In fact, these city-states and nations declined from within, not from without. It's not the Russians and the Chinese that are going to destroy us. It's you and I that is going to destroy us, well, along with our God. He's a little bit ticked off too, I suspect. And over a period of time, these events, as they're unfolding, become more and more obvious. And so to some of us, you know, I'm not talking about the broad brush mainstream of America or Canada or Australia, but, you know, there's a few of us lunatic fringers out here that take a look at these historical trends, these economics, these military developments, and we say, uh-oh, this does not bode well for the future. And then we want to take some kind of evasive action to see whether or not we can be one of those 800 that survive the Titanic, as opposed to one of those 1,500 victims that succumb to it. Now, here in America, we like to live in the country. We don't want to participate in the country lifestyle, but we like to live in the country. We like to pretend. And so the people that pull our strings, they locate our homes out in the country. They give us a lot, you know, 3, 4, 5 acres, and they put us out in the subdivision so that we can commute back and forth to the city. That way, we can pretend like we're farmers and that we're rural people, but we're actually urbanites living out here in the countryside on a piece of ground that's really insufficient to sustain us. And so we have this phenomenon. We can't take public transportation because we're too far away. So we got to have our automobiles. And so we have these automobiles that consume all this oil. And then we consume all this oil and we don't have enough of it. And so we have to go to war in order to secure it. And then we wonder why everybody in the world hates us and why it is we have all these debts and this financial problem, you know, with these trillions of dollars going out to fight our wars and to support our lifestyles and our standard of living. It's kind of a dog chasing his tail. You know, one of these days we'll grab a hold of it there and bite down on it real good and wonder why it hurts so bad. But meanwhile, back on the farm, I've been reviewing a book here called the Strategic Relocation Book. It's North America's Guide to Safe Places, written by Joel Skousen, who happens to make his living doing this for rich people. People that have money call this guy, and he comes out, looks at their house, and puts iron grates over the windows, you know, when you live in the city, and he puts bomb shelters in, and he puts in food storage programs and things like that, and advises people on how to survive a disaster like Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans. I would venture a guess to say that he probably has some clients in New Orleans who went through Hurricane Katrina. I wish I could talk to a couple of three of them and see how did they fare out any better than the average Joe Sixpack. And I'll bet you that for the people living in or around New Orleans, he advised them to get on high ground. I just, you know, just kind of suspect that one of the first things that he thought of was flooding. Because in his book, he points this out from time to time. And he has a section here called The Ideal Criteria. If you were going to locate someplace, you know, just imagine, you know, wherever you live, that you wanted to locate to an ideal location, what would your ideal location be? If you're living in Los Angeles, would your ideal location be in the Imperial Valley or maybe in the Central Valley up around Bakersfield? Would you want a rural setting or would you want a mountain setting? Would you want a farm setting? Would you want a desert oasis? Would you locate in a cold country, you know, like Canada? Or would you locate in a foreign country like Mexico? Or would you locate in a different state? Would you leave Florida and maybe move to North Carolina? Or would you leave North Carolina and maybe move to North Dakota? Or what in your mind, just, you know, from your point of view in life or from your experiences and where you're at, what would you do? Now, there's a little piece that comes out of the book of Proverbs, and it deals with, in Proverbs, you know, in the Bible, talks about wisdom and understanding and knowledge. And God suggests that it would be good for you if you had more knowledge, and then that would develop some more understanding, which would then lead to wisdom. And one of the methodologies that he advises is that there is safety in a multitude of counsel. So if you go and ask 4 or 5 other people what they think, and then you sit down and listen to their ideas, you probably won't agree with most of what other people say because it's pretty hard to overcome your own personal prejudices. But, you know, if you can develop a habit of listening to other people and then say, well, what do they have? And I've tried to cultivate that in my life. You know, I talk to people and I say, well, tell me about that. Explain it to me. Then I went to my Aunt Bessie and I said, you lived through the Great Depression, Aunt Bessie. Tell me, where were you? She was in Petrolia, Northern California. And then I said, how did you make it? You know, how did you get gasoline? How'd you pay your bills? Where did you work? And they were in this little town way down there on the north coast of California or way up there, depending on where you're located. And then she described the Great Depression, and I got through it pretty handily, her and my Uncle Otto. And then I talked to my grandma and my granddad, and I asked them, and I talked to Uncle Buster and Uncle Lloyd, and I got a little input, you know, as to how they made it through it. And so from their experiences, the guys that actually did it, I have in my mind a number of little techniques and strategies and things that I needed to learn, and I learned them, that I think I can use in the event that our economy collapses and we go into a Great Depression like we did in the 1930s. George Gordon, honest to God, believes that he can come through that. You know, I'm not going to come through it unscathed, but I think I can apply some of those real-life experiences of Aunt Bessie and Uncle Buster and to my advantage. And I plan to do that. Now, from my perspective, as a reporter, I report on other people's inventions, and that's what I'm doing here. I didn't develop this book. I didn't write this book. I'm just an observer who is looking at another man's perspective, and I'm analyzing it and trying to learn from it. So I'm learning just like I hope you are. And so I recommend that you get a copy of it if you can. You know, it's 10 years old, and I didn't talk to this guy, and I don't know whether or not the book is still in print. But oftentimes when you have books like this, we can pick them up in used bookstores. So if you know that the title of the book, you know, is Strategic Relocation, The North American Guide to Safe Places, written by a guy named Joel Skousen, who, by the way, has a website, or did at that time. He has an email anyway. He's located at 290 West, 580 South in Orem, Utah. And the number is, the zip code here is 84058. Once more, that's 290 West, 290W. And then put 580 South, that's 580S. And then put Orem, O-R-E-M, Utah, 84058. And I think you might get your letter if he still lives there. He had a telephone number at that time. The number was 801-224-4746. That again is 801-224-4746. And the publisher was called the Swift Learning Resources, American Fork, Utah. Swift Learning Resources. They might have a web page. And they had a telephone number at that time, toll free, 1-800-292-2831. Again, that's 1-800-292-2831. If this book cost you $100, it'd be cheap. Cheap. I read a lot of books. I call this a 1-in-100 book. You'll read 100 books before you find one like this. That's why I rate it as being cheap for $100. And I'll bet you can get it for 25 or 30 or something like that. Anyway, in this ideal criteria, where would you locate if you could just locate anywhere in the world that you wanted to? Or in the case of this book, anywhere in Mexico, Canada, or the United States. If you could just pick a place, where would you want to go? And if you had the resources, what would you put there? What kind of a house would you put there? What kind of a job or occupation or business would you like to be engaged in? How much in the way of supplies? What kind of a car would you want to have, a pickup, an SUV? You know, what kind of tractors? Maybe you're city-oriented and you want to relocate in downtown Manhattan. What kind of safety procedures and precautions would you like to put into place if you were living in a major target area, a major nuclear, or a prime, as they call it here, a prime nuclear target area? Well, I think everybody has an idea. I mean, I do. I did. And then when I read this book, I said, you know, some of these ideas that I've nurtured all these years, you know, really aren't such a good idea. Some of my pet theories, after I read some of these stories in here, I said, uh-oh, that's not a very good idea. Yeah, I can see where that's got a great big gaping hole in it. Why, if I do that, I leave myself open to and vulnerable to this kind of a problem down the road, of which there are a lot of these little problems that come up. And he points that out in his section on the ideal criteria. So he starts off with 12 of these indices, and he starts off with medium to low population density. Listen to this. He says, I specifically didn't mention population density on the national criteria because within even populous nations, you can find areas within those countries where the density of population is not oppressive or dangerous. For long-term peace and security, high-density population areas need to be avoided. Get that? For long-term peace and security, high-density population areas need to be avoided, and for the following reasons. High population density almost always means high instability in a crisis. I'm going to pause here and make my editorial comment. Do you remember the Hurricane Katrina victims down on the Gulf Coast, particularly in a major metropolitan area in New Orleans, and all those people locked up in the Superdome, and then all of those people up on the freeway who were trying to escape, but they were surrounded by the floodwaters, and all of the looting that was going on, and the instability. Now, picture yourself being in the middle of that. Would you say that that's an ideal circumstance, and that's where I want to relocate so that when this event transpires, I can be right in the middle of the action? See, now that's not a good place to be. In fact, you need to be out of there. You need to be out of there. And so you can have an escape plan whereby when the hurricane is on its way, 7 days away, you jump in your car and you split and run. You go to another location, your safe spot. While your house is being flooded and your main asset and resource, your home, is destroyed while you're gone. Well, no, that didn't strike me as being a very good idea either. So along comes Joel Skousen and says, why don't you look ahead and then leave New Orleans? Because if you're a waitress working on Bourbon Street, you know, and you're making good money, and you're living your life here in New Orleans, you know, the happy town. Do you know there are waitresses in Springfield, Missouri, and Louisville, Kentucky? You got it. There are people that work in other cities and locations that are not subject to flooding, like Springfield, Missouri, and Louisville, Kentucky, and Springfield, Illinois. And all over America, there are towns and hamlets, big and small, out of the floodplain, where you could work doing whatever it is you do now. Because, you know, if you're a mechanic in Los Angeles, did you know there are mechanics in other towns? That we have automobiles and trucks and all kinds of machinery in other towns and cities all over America, Canada, and Mexico, where we will need your services. So no matter what your occupation, no matter what your business, no matter what you're doing, there's somebody somewhere doing the same thing in a better location. And if you relocate to one of those better locations and reestablish your business, your occupation, or whatever it is, Then, when this emergency occurs, the earthquake, the big one in California, the tornado in Oklahoma City, or the hurricane in Miami, or in New Orleans, you will be in a better, safer location, and that won't happen to you. And that's what this thing of foresight is all about. That's what Skousen is selling, that you can avoid more problems than you can get out of after the fact. That instead of, and I want to point this out, in Gulfport, Mississippi, instead of fighting with your insurance company and suing them and spending years in litigation and rebuilding your home in Gulfport, Mississippi, that if you lived in Louisville, Kentucky, and all the people in Springfield, Missouri, see, we're not facing that problem. We eliminated it by not living there. Now, I know somebody's going to say, yeah, but I want to live on the Gulf Coast. Well, okay. Okay. I want to live in Tornado Alley. So when a tornado comes and knocks my house down, I'm not going to say to you people out there, you owe it to me because I'm a taxpayer. You people up in Seattle and Tacoma and San Francisco, you owe it to me because I'm a taxpayer. You need to rebuild my house here in Tornado Alley. I will voluntarily accept the risks that go along with my choice to live here in this location. And I want you people in Gulfport to do the same thing. Now, if you have lived through this event in Gulfport, and now you can see from your own personal experience that this tidal surge, when it comes in, when these hurricanes come in, and these hurricanes don't happen every year, now do they? Because, you know, I've been down to Gulfport, and it's kind of a neat place. And I think the Gulf Coast is a wonderful place. And I can see why people want to live there. And I can see why people want to live in San Francisco Bay Area and in various locations. Unfortunately, these locations hold risk. And if you want to eliminate that risk, which could kill you or cause you serious financial problems later on, loss, you know, now's the time to be thinking about it. So he says high population zones. And so now if you're a city guy, you're used to all these people running around. And this is where the money's at. I happen to live in a county that has 12 people per square mile. I'm in a rural setting. Pretty neat place. I kind of like it here. But, you know, I can understand that, you know, if you're a computer guy and you're working for Dell Computers or you're working in Silicon Valley, that may not be too practical for you. And so Skousen goes on and he says, okay, go ahead and stay there in the major metropolitan area, but have a backup. Have a place that you can go to when this emergency transpires. Don't be left in your house in New Orleans with no place to go and no way to get there. That's his point. So he says, excessive speculation. Not enough people have the ability to become generalists and take care of their own basic needs in a crisis or maintain employment. Desperation then results. And then there's massive food and water requirements. You know, these essentials must be shipped in on a nearly uninterrupted basis. The ratio of farmland to people is very low or non-existent when you live in these major metropolitan areas, and that's a problem. Everything that you have has to be shipped in. So if it gets cut off for whatever reason, you suffer immediately. Financial dependence upon regular check payments. Employee workforces are susceptible to strikes and work stoppages, even if only a portion are directly involved with organized labor. Everyone's finances are more vulnerable to bank runs when you're living in major metropolitan areas. And the general psychological feelings of insecurity in a sea of humanity. This leads to a defensive propensity, characterized by the survival of the fittest. For example, power plays, gangs, and mob tactics. And power group segmentation occurs in a crisis due to a lack of moral or ethical cohesiveness. And the potential for mass epidemics, diseases, which spread rapidly in close quarters. The friction of government, traffic increases, and irritations. But in a panic, it is potentially paralyzing. Politics are dominated by liberal and leftist politicians who maintain power by promising and delivering welfare and education benefits, whose costs inevitably outrun the supply of tax funds. So generally, I recommend people always avoid states or provinces where the population is over 100 people per square mile, and the best are usually below 50 people per square mile. And if you go below 20 people per square mile, you begin to be too far distant from major access to economic markets, which is excellent for a retreat, but not for those who must still maintain a job-based income. The next page will give you a graphical depiction of the various states, provinces, and so on, of the United States, Canada, and Mexico, and their respective population densities. And so on page 18 and 19, he puts a population map out here for all three areas, so that you can have an idea of where it is in the country, where there are areas that have low population, but yet are within reasonable proximity to major metropolitan areas so that you can take advantage of the commercial and economic advantages of those metropolitan areas, which I thought was pretty intelligent. He goes on to say that while these maps are useful to give you a general idea, remember that this criteria is for fairly long-term issues. And on the short and medium term, I can find excellent locations in rural New York State, far away from New York City. Hazard zone. He calls New York City a hazard zone. As we will discuss in the threat analysis section, the major problem with large metropolitan areas is the potential for social unrest in a major crisis. Again, let me refer you to New Orleans. That's the site where we saw major social unrest. We see it to this day. They have the highest murder rate and violent crime rate in the nation in this rebuilding process. It doesn't strike me as being the place that I want to go. Now, of course, you know, if you're born there and you've lived there all your lives, you're probably attached to it psychologically, and you'd like to live there. You'd like to move back there. You'd like to participate. You'd like New Orleans to be like it was before Hurricane Katrina. That'll be a long time in the coming. And so in the meantime, if you're caught up in it, you might be suffering through it. The rest of us want to learn from your mistakes. That's what I like to do. I like to watch what other people do and then evaluate what their outcome is. And if it's good, then I want to get in there and do that. And if it's bad, then I want to avoid that, like AIDS, herpes, and VD. All right, so, you know, there's food, clothing, shelter, and all of the problems that go along with living in this high population density area. He goes on and describes more to it. Let's go on to the next one. He says, you want to locate in a place with a moderate-sized major metropolis for access to markets. So moderate size. Notice the word moderate size. Instead of a Los Angeles or a New York, maybe a Springfield, Missouri, or a Louisville, Kentucky. Let's try it. One of the great disadvantages in rural living, far from the centers of modern commerce, is the high amounts of time and expense that it takes in traveling back and forth to obtain all the things that you need. A small percentage of the population is capable of living a sufficiently restricted lifestyle as to avoid these commutes, mainly by learning to be self-sufficient, stockpiling supplies in advance, or doing without many of the nice-to-have but relatively non-essential high-tech conveniences of modern life. However, most of us cannot live this way and still engage in our specialty professions. Even those who can are often unwilling to live this way when there are still other choices available. They willingly play the odds of preparing multiple contingencies in order to have the best of both worlds. And I'm one of those people myself. I try and play all of the possibilities. I have arranged my self-employment and lifestyle so that I can do so without living in or near the highest risk metro areas. Even those parents who have become self-sufficient financially themselves don't have the total freedom to get away from it all. Many of you still have children living with you who need access to education. Even those who homeschool, which provides the optimum amount of family flexibility in relocation, often must have access to a larger metropolis when their children need to go to college. In short, the best of both worlds is to find regions that have several medium-sized metropolitan areas with access to all of the necessary commercial goods, and yet which are close to rural, less congested, and peaceful areas that make ideal home sites. Fortunately, with today's rapid communications and transportation links, even small cities are becoming quite complete in their access to high-tech supplies. But for those who need access to high-powered technicians and expert employees, you will have to live near an active metropolitan area. So you take a look at your business or your occupation, your profession, and you say to yourself, Los Angeles is a great place and I make a lot of money here. Can I relocate and make half as much money? I got to tell you a quick story here. I had an electrician from Boston. He used to make $25 an hour up in Boston. And he relocated to Clinton, Arkansas. Now, that's quite a little change. Boston, Massachusetts to Clinton, Arkansas, where he made $12 an hour. Half as much money as he did in Boston. And he discovered that he could work as an electrician at $12 an hour and live just as well as he could in Boston on half as much money. And that's because the price of housing and rents and the price of food and gasoline and necessities and commute and transportation are also much less. He didn't need as much money. And he relocated to a more rural location. He didn't even have to live in Clinton. He could live out in the country. And then he could work in Clinton. And it's a peaceful, neat place to live, low population density. All of the ideal criteria being spoken of here by Joel Clausen in his book on relocation, he achieved by moving from Boston. And he's happier. His children are just as happy. And it's a new experience. And he has solved the problem of the nuclear bomb striking Boston, Massachusetts. And maybe no bomb will ever strike Boston, Massachusetts. But again, for this guy, why take the risk? It's not very likely that the Russians are planning a strategic bombing run with a 20-megatonner on Clinton, Arkansas. Yeah, I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools total. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the webpage. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports. Reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one for yourself by calling us direct at the Law School, 417-273-4900. 67. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give, however, do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. Remember that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may or may not be endorsed in whole or in part by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers or the sponsors or management or the staff of this network or of any particular local radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, remember our website is georgegordon.org or call us direct at 417-273-4967. We are reviewing a book called Strategic Relocation, put out by a fellow named Joel M. Skousen, who happens to live out in Utah. Probably a Mormon guy, my guess. Joel M. Skousen published this book first in 1998. It's put out by Swift Learning Resources, American Fork, Utah. I don't know that this book is in production or publication today, 10 years later, but you can give it a try. Now, oftentimes when I review a book, maybe it's old and out of print and so on, if you will go to your local used bookstore with just this information, all you need is the title, Strategic Relocation, North American Guide to Safe Places. It has an ISBN number, and that book is going to be recorded. And that guy in the used bookstore will pull that up on his computer, and he'll say, oh, yeah, they put out 10,000 copies, and they put out three editions, and it was first published in 1998, and here's the publisher, and here's the, you know, and they go through all this information, and then they start poking buttons, and pretty soon they'll say, yeah, there's a copy of that in Boston, Massachusetts. Oh, here's another one in Miami, and here's another one down in Houston, Texas. And there's other used bookstores that are plugged into the system, about 500,000 of them worldwide. And so they'll say, well, yeah, there's a copy in Long Beach, California, and the guy wants $20 for it. Want me to order it for you? And so these used bookstores are hooked up through the internet, and he'll just order it for you and say, yeah, it's $20, and we'll have it just shipped to your house, and you just pay that guy in that used bookstore, and he gets online, he orders the book from Long Beach or wherever it happens to be, and they'll ship one to you. And that's the way you find these books, you know, when they're out of print. But just in case this one might still be in print, you can call the publisher called Swift Learning Resources, American Fork, Utah, and their number is 1-800-292-2831. Again, that's 1-800-292-2831. Or the author, it says right here, contact the author. He wants your business. He'd like to sell you a book. He'd probably like to sell you his services. Imagine that's why he put the book out. And remember, this guy is a Vietnam War Marine pilot. He's a trained killer, probably a pretty knowledgeable guy in this thing of subsistence and survival, trained that way in the military. And he puts together these retreats for people that have money and live in the big cities, and they want to be protected, you know. And so they hire this guy, comes out and makes an assessment, takes a look at their location, and shows them how to defend themselves and how to prepare for the eventualities. And his address is 290 West, 580 South, Orem, Utah, 84058. Every time I read one of those Utah addresses, it kind of drives me wild. They're the only people in the world that have this kind of a system. But you just write a letter to the guy, you know, put in there Joel M. Skousen, and when you put the address, you put 290 West, and then you write 580 South, Orem, Utah, 84058. I know it sounds crazy, but they can figure it out. That's 290 West, 580 South, Orem, Utah, 84058. And then he's got a telephone too, or he's used to. And the number is 801-224-4746. That's 801-224-4746. Or you've got an email here, jskousen@enol.com. jskousen@enol.com. Now we're looking at the section here called the ideal criteria. The ideal criteria. His third point in looking for this ideal criteria is self-sufficiency in food, water, and all basic technical supplies. So wherever you go and wherever you relocate, you want to make sure that you've got food, clothing, and shelter, and then whatever else you need for your subsistence and survival right there on site. For how long? Well, I read the book, and I didn't see any particular length of time. He talks about 72 hours in some circumstances, and he talks about 2 years, you know, kind of, you know, on the side. And in our school, we recommend a minimum 4-year supply, minimum 4-year supply. And it could be that you need 7. If we go back and look at the example of Joseph in Egypt, they stockpiled a 7-year supply. And I would suspect that with this great tribulation coming on, that if you had a 4-year supply stashed, plus you had an open pollinated seed package or two, coupled with some raised beds or some garden space large enough and with enough skill and ability on your part to produce your own food on your own land, to make up for the other 3 years if it needs that much. You know, just take a look at a four-year war in Iraq. We've been at it now, and we're in our fourth year there. The people living in Baghdad. Now, just picture yourself living in Baghdad, Iraq. How would you like that? I mean, you know, you've got millions of people doing that, but do you think that that's a very ideal subsistence and survival location where they kill about, I don't know, every night on the news, 30, 40, 50 people in Baghdad? 100 people a day being killed in Iraq now. Now, boys and girls, it doesn't really make a lot of difference if your friends at your own church are killing you, or some of your neighbors who are members of another church down the street are killing you, or whether it's the United States Army killing you, or it's the Iraqi government killing you, or it's some outside terrorist group killing you. You know, once they kill you, you're just as dead, aren't you? So, you know, those Iraqis are facing the kind of problem that this man, Joel Skousen, is picturing for a city near you, where you live, in Canada, the United States, or Mexico, when the world's economy collapses and civil unrest occurs and wars break out and the Great Tribulation comes upon us and so on. And if you want to be one of the survivors from these eventualities, then you have to take action today. And you saw what happened on 9/11, live, in your living room, on television, when the mayor, Rudy Giuliani, shut down all transportation in New York City. And if you were standing in Manhattan and you lived in Long Island, you had to walk home. The ferries are shut down. The subways are shut down. The buses are shut down. And the traffic is shut down. The place is paralyzed. They shut down the bridges. You couldn't drive across a bridge to get onto or off of Manhattan. And so there you are. And you know, with the clothes that you're wearing and with the money that you got in your pocket and you're in Manhattan and you're a tourist and you're from Louisville, Kentucky. Now what are you going to do? Well, you know, you'll probably survive that. But, you know, if you were living down there near that blast zone, down near the trade towers, you know, that makes life kind of tough. And in some cases, those people had to leave. And when you leave, because of one of these emergencies, you're called a refugee. A refugee. And refugees are spoken of in the Bible. There's a little section of the Bible there in Matthew chapter 24. It's also in Mark 13, Luke 21. Anyway, Jesus made this observation. He said, you want to pray that your flight be not in the winter time or on the Sabbath day. When you are made a refugee, you want to make sure that it isn't in January in downtown Montreal. So if you're living in Montreal, you might want to think about that and say, I wonder if I should leave Montreal today before I become a refugee and maybe move out here someplace and make some plans and preparations and have a little food, clothing, and shelter stash. Now, the people do this, they call them survivalists. Survivalists. And that's a good term. I didn't know that that was a wicked, evil term until somebody said, oh, you're one of those kind of like you had dog doo-doo on your shoe. Oh, you're one of those survivalists. That's almost like saying, oh my God, you're one of those terrorists. Excuse me, but those 800 survivors on the Titanic were all survivalists. And the other 1,500 people were all victims. So I guess you got a choice. You can be a survivalist, you know, one of those dirty, low-down, right-wing, radical, off-the-wall kooks, or you can be dead. Or I guess you could be a refugee in some kind of a state-run facility in Houston, Texas, you know, as a refugee from New Orleans. I don't care. You're not going to offend me one way or the other. So when somebody says, oh, my God, you're one of those survivalists, I tell them, you got that right. Yeah, you got that right. That's why I don't live in Los Angeles. That's why you won't find me in New York. I get real nervous when I get into a big city. I always ask myself, oh, my God, what happens if the Russians uncork on us today? And here I am in downtown. I was down in Austin, Texas, you know, last year. And I'd look around, you know, and I'd say, I wonder if this is a prime bomb zone. Jeez, I wonder if the economy turns upside down, you know. Can I get from here back home, you know, to where there's peace, stability, safety, happiness, and maybe I got something to eat? All right, so when somebody calls you a survivalist, you know, well, I didn't know that was a bad word. I've been called a constitutionalist. And the words kind of roll off of their tongue. Oh, you're one of those constitutionalists. Policemen do that a lot. You're one of those constitutionalists. These cops all swear an oath to uphold and protect the Constitution of the United States, but when you apply it and you say, well, I'm going to stand on my constitutional rights and remain silent, they get real defensive and they get kind of nasty and upset. And you're one of those constitutionalists. Just kind of like it's like you got dog doo-doo on your shoes, you know. I didn't know there was anything wrong with the Constitution. I thought it was a pretty good idea, and I thought it was kind of a neat program, and I've been living with it all my life, and I thought it worked out pretty well for us Americans, but I guess it's kind of old. I like old Jay Leno. He said, we're going to ship our Constitution over to Iraq. We don't use it over here anymore. Don't need it. Number four, he says, higher than average cross-section of moral industrialist people, or industrious people you're looking for. So if you're thinking about relocation, instead of relocating from wherever you are, to a locality that has a population of people that are something less than moral, maybe you might want to avoid that. Now, of course, here in the United States, our morals, I don't think, can get any lower. I can't imagine how you can get lower than 10% of your population practicing sodomy or openly marrying people in church. in church. I mean, you got preachers out here marrying boys and boys and girls. You know, you talk about morality. You know, I don't think, did the Romans ever do something like that? I mean, they were pretty slack people, but I don't ever remember reading anything about the about open sodomy going on there. I imagine there's a little of it here and there, but so, you know, be thinking about morality. Now, of course, if your morals are about like Bill Clinton's, well, in hell, you can go live just about any place. I mean, you don't have to be real particular. Now, for the other four or five of you Americans, you know, here in the United States, or maybe there's 10 or 15 of you, I don't know exactly, but, you know, you might want to be thinking about, oh, my God, you know, do I really want to locate in Los Angeles, Philadelphia, or New York, or San Francisco, or some of these places? And so you might say to yourself, well, no, maybe there are some places that have better morals and a better class or group of people. And I happen to live down here in the Bible Belt. Now, there's some real problems down here in the Bible Belt. Now, there's some things that I really don't care too much for. But on balance, though, you know, you take everything that you like and everything that you don't like. I find that these people down here in the Bible Belt are pretty good people. And frankly, I would rather be associated with and be in close proximity to people that go to church every Sunday, and the people that ride motorcycles, snort coke, and sell cocaine on the street. There's a little drug dealing goes on here. I wouldn't deny that. But we don't have drug-related gang shootings and gangs marauding up and down Highway 160 or down HH down to the lake and so on. And that's because we don't have a class of people with low morals. We don't have drug dealers and drug addicts. And you know, there's just the influences that you see in a lot of these major metropolitan areas just aren't here. And so that's why I live here. I'm just one of those kind of guys that says, well, I think I can avoid more problems than I can get out of, so I think I'll stay away from it. So he points out here that don't be squeamish about making judgments here. Areas do differ in people makeup. Optimally, you want a good mix between working class people and managerial and professional types. High-powered metro areas with lots of highly educated people are inherently lopsided and unstable, too many prima donnas to deal with as well. On the other extreme, predominantly rural agricultural areas have plenty of very nice people, but very little in the way of intellectual stimulation or even good thinking. And that's where I'm at. I live in an area here, agricultural, and there's nice people here, but they have very little in the way of intellectual stimulation or even good thinking. And I'll agree with him, that's true. And I say that not to insult these people, only to say that in today's sophisticated world of bad environmental law, excessive regulation, and excessive urban planning, the communities that often get ruled over by these overeducated and liberty-destroying city planners are the rural communities. And to their credit, rural people can often sense when something is wrong. But the levels of discussion over time get so sophisticated and muddled by the opinions of city attorneys telling people what they must do that almost always rural communities lose the battle to the regulators. And worse yet, when rural people decide to become modern and then jump on the regulation bandwagon, acting as members of city councils or school boards, they can do some very stupid things that unknowingly destroy others' liberty. In short, it's very frustrating trying to deal with people who are relatively incapable of understanding difficult arguments and who haven't the inclination to expand their thinking abilities to learn. I've been there, and I know the frustration of small-town living. And I still choose rural life for retreats, but not for daily living. So look for a balance. And I found it most often in the medium-sized towns that are within an hour's drive of a large metropolitan area. Well, just looking at where this guy's located in Orem, he's within an hour's drive of, or less, of Salt Lake City. And Orem's a pretty good-sized town. In fact, I take a look at Orem and Provo and Ogden, I say, oh, my God, I wouldn't want to live there. Too big. Small town. You know, if you went looking for a small town, try places like Clinton, Arkansas, and Mountain Home, Arkansas, Forsyth, Missouri, and stay away from Branson. Stay away from Springfield. You know, once a city gets up to 100,000, I mean, boys and girls, they start having crime and problems just like big cities do. So, you know, it's up to you. You can make up your own mind. And he's got a lot of neat ideas in here. We've covered four here so far. And now you're looking for a place. Number five, he says, you're looking for a place that has low state taxes and low levels of regulations. Low state taxes and low regulations. Well, if you move to Florida, New York, or California, you're going to have lots of regulations and lots of high taxes. I happened to be down in Florida one day, and this guy's an airline pilot, lived over in Fort Lauderdale, took me over to his house, not a bad house, three-bedroom house, had a swimming pool, three-bedroom house with a swimming pool. A house that if it was located in Boise, Idaho at the time would have probably sold for $100,000. Where he was located at the time, it's about 20 years ago now, but at the time it was $300,000 in Fort Lauderdale. And the taxes were, property taxes, $12,000 a year, $1,000 a month. All he had there was a working class house in Boise, Idaho, Louisville, Kentucky, Springfield, Missouri. Nothing to brag about. Again, you know, not a bad house, a nice house. Had a swimming pool in the backyard. Probably sitting on a third of an acre, be my guess, maybe a half. But certainly nothing to brag about in today's world. That house is probably $1 million 20 years later, maybe more, I don't know. And the property taxes are probably, you know, $2,000 a month. I don't know. You're going to have to be somebody that's got money to live in that kind of a neighborhood. But, you know, you can have that kind of a house in a rural setting in Nebraska or Kansas or Missouri. I live in one of those. If my house was located in Fort Lauderdale, my God, it'd be $2 or $3 million. Why, here, I don't think it'd bring, well, I don't know, $100,000 maybe even $150,000. It's a big house, a big old ranch house. You know, if you had a big house like this in a city setting over here, well, you couldn't afford it. So you can live a lot better out here in the country. In fact, you know, if you're a blue collar worker and you're out here and you're making your money and you're doing your thing in the big city and you're saying, well, I'm really raking in the bucks. That's great. But construction's going down the tubes in Las Vegas. It's going down the tubes in Boston. I had a lady in here the other day. She's got a house on the market up in Maine. I've been on the market now for several months, and she says she hadn't even had one looker come over and say, hey, listen, let me look at it. The real estate market where this lady lives up in Portland, Maine, just tanked. It's gone. It's not there. So, you know, obviously, if you got houses that won't sell in Portland, Maine, I doubt that you have very many people that are building houses in Portland, Maine. So tuck that one away in your heart. And ask yourself, well, what am I going to do? Well, Clinton, Arkansas, maybe wouldn't be such a bad place, huh? Or Mountain Home or Forsyth, Missouri, or someplace else, where you can relocate and do a little bit better in an area that's, you know, not cooking, you know, not you know, out here in the top 400, but then, you know, something that's not dead either. So I just want to throw that out for your consideration. Now, we're looking at the ideal criteria, you know. So let me just break off right there and remind you that we have a health class here February 5th through the 9th, and down in Austin, Texas, we're planning on a tax class, down there from the 26th of February to the 2nd of March. So if you're interested and you're in Austin, Texas, give us a call up here. Let's see if we can enroll you. And then the health class February the 5th through the 9th here at the school in Isabella, Missouri, talking about degenerative diseases and how to avoid it, like AIDS, herpes, and VD. Hey, we're about out of time. We have to leave it right there. We'll take it up right here with the ideal criteria for a relocation, strategic relocation, next time. Meanwhile, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. And if you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. And the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, just go to our homeschooling page on our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.